It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
So I literally, like, moments ago came back from therapy. So we got a lot to unpack this episode. My therapist thinks it's mostly all your fault.
Oh, well, yeah, we already knew that. You spent an hour and that's all she had to say?
I mean, it helped to get a professional advice on there. No, but I forgot. I actually was talking about the podcast. And I was talking about how we have a very small group of listeners, but that we're very involved with them. They write us and we talk to them and about them, and then they comment on the blog and all that. I said, and I was like, actually, and for episode 500, they all, and she stopped me and she said, 500? And I was like, oh, yeah, sorry. We've been doing this for over 10 years. Yeah, we're in the high 500s, yes. Like, I forgot that's news. Often I would lead with that before. I'm like, we have so many episodes, but I didn't think of it. All right. Hello, everyone. It's that time of year again.
Yeah.
Come on, everyone. We got YouTube now, so gather your family. We're all having Thanksgiving in person. Gather your family around the YouTube and spend about an hour with us. This is the Thanksgiving episode of the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast that refuses to let this idea die until somebody actually does it. Somebody's gonna gather their family around on Thanksgiving, probably a family that doesn't care about football, after you've all eaten, and you're all gonna watch the podcast together. Hello, family.
Hello.
I'm Tony.
I'm William, and this is episode 558. Welcome to our Thanksgiving episode.
Yes.
Every year we have a Thanksgiving episode. Some years we have a Christmas episode. Some years we have a Halloween episode. But every year we have a Thanksgiving episode.
Because we're always on Thursdays. And so that's how it works. And we never have a Black Friday episode. So there's never special deals. Sorry, I'm realizing I didn't get the email up. Because, again, just got back from therapy.
So... All right. Is this the second time you've gone in person?
Yes.
Okay.
And after some discussion, we have decided I'm going to continue to go in person, not because it benefits the therapy at all for either of us, but because it gets me out of the damn house.
Well, there's that. Yeah.
No, so, it's a thing.
You don't notice a benefit to being in person.
Nope. And neither does she, apparently.
Interesting.
No, didn't really feel anything. I think you got out of the job world too fast. Well, no, actually, I don't think that, but I mean, I think part of your response is a lot of us, even pre-COVID, spent a lot of time doing this.
Really?
Yes. Because even before COVID, there were people working remotely, people working in different offices or whatever. And this became a thing, Skype and now Microsoft Teams. But near the big, we started doing this even with Zoom before COVID. Zoom was becoming a big thing. And so, yeah, I think a lot of us are used to this now, more so. And I mean, it is a great tool. There are situations where it's such a great option because in person isn't an option or is very complicated or has difficulties, and that's great. Overall, gun to my head, I'd say it's still probably better in person, but yeah, she and I aren't noticing a difference, but I'm like, I think it's probably good for me to have a reason to get out. So many of my issues now revolve around me not socializing enough. And even though it's so small, there is a social aspect to the fact that I get out, I have to drive. I mean, it's not social in terms of talking, but like I have to navigate other people and things like that. I have to talk, like, just stuff. So I think that's good for now. We'll see. I told him, like, once winter really kicks in, I might say screw it. So because we have families listening and a lot of people who maybe don't have experience with this, I should explain to you how the show works. We have a hat. You won't see it. It's off screen. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Isn't that magical? How many other hats have their own email address? I'm going to guess none. Again. Can't verify that, but I'm going to guess none. And then people write in to that email address. Nothing to do with us, me and him, just the hat. They're like, hey, hat, what's up? How's it going? And they have things they want to talk about. Also, sometimes they want to talk to us, but they are intimidated by our robust presences to contact us directly. So they email the hat. Anyway, whatever they want to talk about, they want to ask questions, they want to have topics, they want to celebrate the birth of their children who they have named Hat in honor of this podcast, whatever. And then the hat, it decides all on its own which emails it's going to send over to us. It forwards them to us, and then we'll read them on the air and talk about them or something close to them until we're bored, and we do a bunch of other stuff. So that's it. So welcome, everyone. As you're watching this, we are both further away from each other than we usually are. Except you're probably in the same place.
Yes, on actual Thanksgiving, yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I will be in a whole other state. Yeah. We are doing the full traditional deal, which is we will leave sometime Wednesday and then come back sometime Sunday, and I'll just be at my in-laws that whole time. A lot of food involved. Hopefully playing some games. I found out / was told a long time ago, but forgot and was just recently reminded that my sister and one of my sisters-in-law and my father, I don't remember, some members of my family are going glass blowing on Friday.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah. My wife, and who the hell is blowing up my phone? I'm gonna check it just in case someone's on fire or whatever. No, it is definitely not. All right. My wife and apparently my father-in-law, and actually my father in particular, those three have a thing about glass blowing. Like, they are obsessed. They will go to a glass blowing studio and they will watch glass being blown. And if you don't come get them, they will die there. They will forget to eat. They will forget to go to the bathroom. They will be trapped. And my mother discovered, because along the Oregon coast, glass blowing is a huge thing. And nowadays you can do your own glass blowing. They have things where you can come in and they help it. And Trish and I did it. My mom has done it several times. And it's kind of fun. And yeah, apparently now they got it in Peoria, Illinois. So they're going to go do that. I think my father-in-law is going to go and just watch. I don't know. I'm not doing it because I don't do stuff, especially on holiday. I'll probably still be asleep when they go. Excuse me. So how's your 5 days been?
Just a lot of work. That's all. I mean, I'm sure we've watched some things that I'll forget until you talk about things and then I'll remember. Or maybe you'll mention a thing and I will say, oh yeah, we saw that too. But I mean, nothing that I was so impressed with that I'm remembering off the top of my head. But a lot of work. I thought that I was going to get to a nice point tomorrow where I could maybe take the next 4 days off, like take Thanksgiving and the next day and the weekend off. Because except for right after the surgery, I haven't really had any time off. I didn't, when I got home, and I had like 2 weeks or something of really where I could do nothing, I didn't take advantage of that. I did a whole bunch of stuff and I shouldn't have, because what I should have done was I should have just done nothing, right? I should have just rested, you know, took care of myself so that when school started, I'd be like, you know, not worn out, but makes I kind of was. I didn't do that. I didn't take those 3 weeks just off. And here's the thing. I even sort of prepared to take those 3 weeks off where I would like read or something, right? Catch up on reading, listen to a book that Jazz recorded for me and all this stuff. I didn't do any of that stuff. I worked. I like did work. And then when school started, I remember when it started, I was thinking, oh, that was a mistake. So it's been kind of rough and I'm feeling kind of burnt out. I've only got a couple weeks left, but I don't. And you know that feeling when you're in school or you're working on a big project, whatever it is, and you're feeling burnt out like a week or two before it's done. And you're thinking, am I going to make it?
Oh yeah. 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 I get short-term syndrome with everything.
Yeah. You know,
I'm having it right now, just knowing we were going on vacation, even though it's just the family for Thanksgiving.
If your burnout happens at the right time where you're going to sort of be on a break, that's all right. But if the burnout starts like a week or two before you're done, I mean, then you kind of panic because it's like, well, what if I don't have the juice to do this? So this last week's been a little rough and I still have some weeks to go. And I don't know, that's been a little discouraging, but it is what it is. Hopefully, the next couple of weeks will go well. And the next 3 week break I have, I think I'm going to do a better. Well, I don't know. I mean, I've got stuff to do. I've got to finish Wisp. I've got things to do, but maybe I'll figure out some way to take it a little more easy for the 3 weeks after, so that when school starts again, I'll feel better and I won't get burnt out in the 10 weeks that follow.
Unless they replace the portion of your brain along with the aortic root and the valve, I doubt it. You are the busiest unemployed man I've ever met. Always have been. It's weird.
I don't know why I can't just. I don't know why. I mean, I try to do it.
You need to be. Stop being a human doing and be a human being.
Right. And I mean, I've known that for years, and I sit down and I try to do it and I read books about how to do it and articles and I listen to people's advice. But what happens is I start and then I don't even realize when I stopped. You know what I mean? It's like,
no, I have the opposite problem.
Just all of a sudden I'm doing something and I have to go, whoa, 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 wait, why am I, what happened? I was meditating or I was just sitting still. Now I'm doing this. How did that happen? It completely sneaks up on me. I don't know. Maybe it's
binge
like
watch all of Supernatural
or something. I don't know.
That'll do it. That'll keep you busy doing nothing.
Just, it's not a good thing. I mean, it's not a good thing. And I don't know what to do about it. And I've been this way.
You not watching the YouTube one, I'm shaking my head.
Been this way my whole life. It's kind of because, like, when my family, you know, everybody goes through things when they're growing up where their parents want them to do something and they don't want to do it. And I was no different. But the thing I noticed that was different from me and some other people, not all other people, but some other people, was that they wanted to replace that thing their parents wanted them to do. They wanted to replace that thing with nothing. I wanted to replace it with something else. I had some other specific, very specific thing I wanted to do. Typically, it was a thing that was pretty involved, maybe even more labor intensive than what they wanted me to do. So it wasn't a lazy issue. It was I don't want to do what you want me to do. I want to do this instead. Whereas a lot of my peers, not all of them, but a lot of them would be like, yeah, what I want to do instead is nothing. I want to lay down. I want to sleep. I want to watch, you know, veg in front of the television.
I think,
but I always had some other thing that I wanted to do. And
I think we've found the first legitimate reason why you should start drinking. That'll help you not do things.
No, what it is. And it's not, it's
medicinal.
You know, it's not industriousness. It's not, I mean, that would be a good thing. This is just an inability. It's a lack of discipline is what it is. It's a problem. And I don't know. I struggled with it my whole life.
Go see my therapist about it. She's already well-versed on you. So you'll hit the ground running.
Well versed, huh? It's good. Well, you know what they say about people who go into therapy. Their therapists learn a lot about them and their partners, whatever that means. You know, their spouse or their business partner, or in our case, you know, creative partners or whatever. That does happen. Yep.
I don't think anybody actually says that, but it's true.
So, how was your week?
It was a trip. We talked before a little bit. I can't remember. You and I talked a lot off the air last time. I've been making some realizations in therapy that have caused me to realize my perception of other people might be off. And that's a good thing to learn, but in the short term, it means a lot of things that I thought I had in common with others, I maybe don't. And so it's been a little alienating. And that was a little trippy. And then Saturday, we went to a show. We went to see Kyle Kinane, the comedian who we love, who we've seen before. I can't hear you at all. I don't know what's up.
I don't know who that person is.
Kyle Kinane is a stand-up comedian of which we are large fans and have been for many years. We've seen him live before, actually. This was at the Englert downtown, and I was nervous because I'm like, people smashed in. We bought these tickets ages ago. But I had friends who had gone to a concert there recently, and I was like, what are the precautions? And she said, everybody has to wear masks and you have to prove vaccination or a recent negative COVID test. And I was like, all right, I like this. So we did that and we did. It was very weird being out amongst people. It was a good show. It was an interesting show. Ended up being four comedians. There was a local opener, two feature players, and then Kyle. And the local opener was interesting. Like, I've seen local comedians before, and it's a different thing, and they're getting started. He's gonna be funny someday. I am confident of that, but he's not there yet. He is very much throwing shit against the wall and seeing what sticks. It's very interesting. But also, nobody knows how to go out yet. Like, there was more heckling than I have ever experienced at a comedy show. And more traffic, for lack of a better term. People getting up and shit in the middle of the show, leaving and coming back and stuff. That doesn't happen normally, and it's not supposed to. It was happening a lot. Whole thing was kind of crazy for that, but it was fun. I like Kyle a lot because he's almost exactly my age, and a lot of the life progression he has is similar to mine. So, like, I'll see a show and I'll really relate to it, and then I'll change over the years and I'll go see a new show and he has also changed, and so I relate to it on a new level. And so that was kind of fun. And actually, he finally started therapy recently, and he was talking about that. Although I did like, he's like, I started therapy. He's like, okay, I started paying for therapy. He's like, for a couple of years, I would just find people that had similar problems to me and, like, just talk to them the day after they went to therapy. But the favorite I like, he got on a whole thing about the Midwestern sort of masculine attitude of being sort of anti-therapy and like, you know, you just hold all your issues inside. You have to be tough and strong in this. And the line that I loved is said, "I don't have problems. I just have character traits that nobody likes." And that really struck a chord somewhere in me there. But yeah, it was weird being around all the people. That part wasn't fun, but it was funny. I laughed a lot. Trish and I both would have loved it if it was like a half hour shorter. Not that the last half hour wasn't hilarious, but we were tired. It went late. And we were like, oh, we're so old. We need to go home, go to bed. As time goes on, I hate downtown on the weekend more and more. It's just awful. But Sunday, went to the memorial service for my former coworker who died from COVID. And that was weird because very early on, I decided I couldn't hack it. And I went and waited in the car. And I'm still not sure why I did that. So that was weird. I seem to be having an issue right now of pretty serious social anxiety. I'm not doing well around more than a handful of people. Thanksgiving will be interesting for that because this summer in Virginia is essentially the same group, and that was just the right size and it was very good for me and it allowed me to socialize in a way that I was comfortable with and that was good. So it might be that again, but I don't know. It will be quite a few people, so we'll have to see. So that was a little weird. Not a lot going on. We are almost finished with season one of Ted Lasso and season one of Doom Patrol. And I am incredibly grateful for Doom Patrol because far too often we lose track of where we are in the season. We're like, how many episodes is this season? What are we on? And it's important because we want to know what we're going to do next. And also frequently, like the second to last episode is a cliffhanger. So you often want to watch the last two together and stuff like this. Doom Patrol, I'm very happy with. All of their episodes are called Something Patrol. Like that's the joke. And the next episode we have is called Penultimate Patrol. So I know exactly how far we are in the season. And that's handy. Yeah, but not a lot else going on. So,
you know, you were talking about the comedian and how he's not quite there yet. So back in the day in vaudeville, one of the things you might do when you were putting an act together is you'd start in certain markets. You'd start, you know, you wouldn't, you'd try it out. So if you went to certain markets in vaudeville, you'd be seeing people doing these acts for the first, second, you know, they were still workshopping it. These small towns weren't getting their best stuff. And the idea was that as you worked it out and worked it out, eventually you'd go to other markets. And when you really perfected your act, that's when you'd go to the bigger places. And I think that's where that was the origin of things like B-list and C-list and all that stuff, A-list.
And will it play in Peoria?
Yeah, that kind of stuff. So to me, that's so cool. I really think that's interesting. And some time ago, I wanted to see if I could figure out a way to make YouTube lists where I could find people who were doing things on YouTube. Like people who were trying to juggle or people who were trying to do certain acts and they were filming them. And sometimes they were okay. Cause that's the thing about YouTube is the same thing. You can find people who are just starting out and maybe they're not that good, but then you watch them 5 years later and you can see they kept at it and now they're better. And I thought, I'm going to make you call them playlists, where I can find people who are doing that kind of thing and I can put them in tiers and then, you know.
And I think you should, because you have so much free time. You really need to fill it up with stuff.
That would take a long time. But I thought if I could do it and I did it right, like people could come to my would come to my page to see people do their thing and get better, or to submit their own thing. They'd want that to get on the list. Say, hey, put me on your list. I think I'm a C-lister. Tell me what you think. And I thought that would really be really fun. But it, as you just pointed out, it would be so labor intensive, but it would be so fun to watch all these videos and to pick all these people and to put them in, you know, certain places and to see how they could improve.
I think it would be fun to do. I'm not sure the end product would be that useful to the zeitgeist.
Well,
I don't think it would be very popular, but I think it would be fun to play around with.
It would probably only be popular to the performers and their families.
Except, even then, it's like, oh, if you want to watch this person evolve, watch their YouTube channel.
The list I was going to put together were like little shows. So you could play the list and you'd have a comedian or you'd have an acrobat and you'd have, you know, so each one would be like a little vaudeville show, but some of them would be people just starting out. Some would be people who are really good. So there would be that aspect. Like, I guess I thought that I could use some creativity and some, you know, I don't know what I thought I could do, but I thought I could put some good shows together. Exactly. But I didn't know. Yeah, I didn't know.
And no, of course, I think you could make some great stuff. My assessment is not that it's not worthwhile. My assessment is from how I understand people to make use of YouTube. I don't know that it would have worked, but I think it would have been cool. There's lots of cool stuff on YouTube nobody watched. And I should say, this guy, he didn't bomb. People laughed. I laughed. It was just very scattershot. And I've seen a lot of local comedians, and this guy really seemed to be winging it a lot. Like, his bits were clearly not improv bits, but they just weren't cobbled together well. But it was two things I really loved is there was one bit where he, I don't even remember the joke now, but something really got a response. And after it died down, he's like, that is the most that joke has ever played. Like that, he's like, that's the line. That's where you guys decided it was funny. That's weird. But I also liked at the very beginning, he had us all give a round of applause to some single dude in the audience because it was a friend of him. And he's like, he is the only one of my friends who has actually shown up to one of my comedy gigs. He's like, I tell all my friends and they never come. And this is the first time somebody's come. So we all clapped for that guy.
So have you ever been tempted to get into that business yourself?
Oh, yeah. Very much. You know why though? The reason I have been tempted is because everybody in the goddamn world has always told me I should be a stand-up, and I don't know that I'd be good. I mean, I could work at it. If I did it for 10 years, I'd probably be okay. There's a variety of reasons. The shorthand version is I'm just not quite damaged enough. A lot of stand-up has to do with a very specific sort of psychological need for attention and acceptance in a very specific way. And I have that, but not to the degree that I need to make a career of it.
Interesting.
But the real reason is the same reason I'm not already a best-selling author and I didn't become a famous actor and everything else is that shit takes work and I don't like putting in work. I think I would do poorly with bombing for like years at a time because it's a hard row to hoe. And you know, there's a lot of travel that I don't like nowadays and all that, but no, there are definite times when I thought that would be a thing. And in college, I was definitely funnier than Kumail Nanjiani, but he got better. Not me.
You don't think you got better?
Nah.
Surely you're funnier now than you were.
I mean, ticket sales don't lie. I have not been pulling in the numbers that I used to pull in. So,
okay.
You know, it all comes down to dollars and cents. And even if you adjust for inflation, especially when you adjust for inflation, I'm just not making what I used to. If it weren't for those basic cable gigs where you see a video clip and like make jokes about it, I'd be on the street. All right. So we should do an email thing. You want to take the first one?
Sure. I can do that. Azure Talon? Is that sound right?
I mean, I've heard of that guy.
No, I'm okay. Alan says, I am glad that we have this new format because, you know, before I go on, I wonder what it's like when you or I read someone, I mean, you know, when they type it out, when they write it, it's kind of in their head and their voice. And here we are reading it in our voice. And we, you know, we emphasize all the words different than they emphasized in their head. And it's like,
it's funny you should say this.
Why?
Something else happened this week. Trish and I have been talking about it for a while, but we finally started this week. Trish is reading me my own novel. She suggested it a while ago. She's like, so you can hear, because obviously you know how it sounds to you, but yeah. Now you can hear how somebody it sounds to somebody else. And if still makes sense. And Trish, I should say, for the record, very good at dramatic readings. Always has been. I find she's not, I mean, she's not like me. I do voices and shit, but like she'll read me stuff. She like a blog post or whatever. And she really knows how to get a cadence. So it sounds good. And she's doing that here. And I'd say she was reading in a very similar style to where she always does. And it totally sounds wrong.
Really?
It doesn't sound bad. So I'm not bothered.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But she absolutely doesn't do it the way I hear it in my head. Not at all. And there are times where it's a real thing. I'm like, shit, no, you should have punched the other word. No, you're not. No, it's more of revelatory than just comment, like things like that. All through it. I'm like, yeah, you're not doing it right at all.
Wow. That's interesting.
It's fascinating. Huh. And I'm enjoying it. And it's good too, because I need to reread this soon because I'm going to work on the next one, and this way it's happening for me. But yeah, that exact thing is going on, and it's very weird.
Well, I apologize to Azure Talon for, I'm sure, butchering whatever he's saying here, but anyhow.
And I don't.
I am glad that we have this new format because I've had a topic rattling around in my head for a while now that is too complicated to ask in a tweet.
Woohoo! This is why we do this. Come on.
But it's not long. I mean, he's only got a couple sentences here. So anyway, how do you handle interacting with or even being friends with a compulsive liar? He goes on, but I want to point out that I have had quite a bit of experience with this. What if, and I don't mean you, Tony, I mean other people. What if you have to deal with a compulsive liar secondhand socially? That's interesting. How does knowing someone verifiably has lied to you in a large percentage of prior interactions change, believe all women, if at all? Oh, that was a turn I didn't see coming. How does knowing someone verifiably has lied to you in a large percentage prior interactions change, believe all women, if at all? Dealing with that personally drives me crazy.
Well, based on things I'm not at all going to discuss, something about that has tipped me off. So I now have a theory about some specificity about what this email may be about, which is funny because I don't know a lot about Azure Talon's social life, but something about this, I have a theory. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. This is interesting. And to be fair to Azure Talon, which you know I hate doing, while I do think in general that could have been expressed in a way small enough to fit on a note card, that exact email is definitely too big. And I think there's enough nuance here that I think it is more suited to the new format.
Okay.
I think he would have had to sort of clip it a little bit to do it in the old format. This is part of why I like this. This is a fascinating topic that I am not equipped to handle. You have experience. Go. What do you do?
Well,
or were you lying about knowing compulsive liars?
I've known compulsive liars my whole life. And there's a couple levels because it depends for me and me. I'm just going to speak personally. Okay. I don't think I can speak for everybody.
As opposed to all the other times when you speak for other people.
Oh, I just don't want people to think I'm giving advice or that I think this is how it has to be done.
I think we need to put that in the intro. What? William only ever speaks for himself. Take that as read. Because it always cracks me up when you specify that.
Anyway, so it's relevant how intimate our relationship is. If the person is anywhere from a casual friend to less, like, you know, casual friend, acquaintance, whatever, them being a compulsive liar doesn't bother me at all. I mean, I learned that this is how they communicate. This is how they deal with the world. This is, you know, that they're going to say things that aren't true or that I don't know if they're true. So I might as well not give it much thought. It doesn't bother me. Mostly because a person who I have a relationship with as a casual friend or further apart than that, I don't have any reason to rely on them for anything. I don't have any reason to trust them for anything. We're probably just interacting on a casual basis every once in a while. Their compulsive lying doesn't harm me. Now, I might have an issue if I see their compulsive lying as harming someone else in particular, but a lot of compulsive liars I've known, ones I'm thinking of lived alone for obvious reasons. And their lies were pretty harmless. I mean, their compulsive lying was just that. It was compulsive. It was just like any other compulsion where a person has, they wash their hands a lot, or maybe they have some kind of phobia. Everybody around them understood that this was a compulsion they had, that they were coping with some psychological thing that nobody really knew or understood because people didn't know them very well. But they served some social purpose to the group, like maybe sometimes they were very funny, or maybe sometimes they had some insight about something, or they were part of a work group, right? So that's why they were there and people tolerated them. The compulsive lying ended up being very harmless. But another aspect, kind of getting back to what he said about when he brought up the believe all women thing, there are some times when you know compulsive liars like this, and like I say, you're not close, so you kind of ignore it or whatever, where they will say things that you would normally react to. Like they'll say they had some experience of discrimination, say, or abuse even. And, you know, that crosses into a different place, right? Their compulsive lying is about, I don't know, some disagreement they had with someone or whatever. It's just a simple, silly thing. But they'll talk about something that is like pretty serious that you would normally respond to, even with a person you didn't know very well. You'd be like, oh my gosh, that's terrible, you know? And you don't know what to do because your immediate reaction is to not believe them because you never believe them. And you're right to not believe them because things they say are constantly being proven wrong. I mean, that's why you know they're a compulsive liar, because they'll say something and you'll find out for sure that it's not true. And it that's tricky. That is tricky. What he's saying, it is hard because, you know, it's a serious thing. And I think we like to think that, you know, people don't lie about that kind of stuff. But a tiny, tiny group of people do. It's a small group of people.
Now,
but they do. You
talked about you gave us the case, the situation where you are not close to someone. Have you had the circumstance where you are?
Oh, yes.
And how do you deal with that? You gave us the first one as though you were going to give us the second case.
I will.
Then, oh, okay. Sorry.
But you start with the case where it doesn't really matter. Then there's this sort of middle ground where the person's lying usually doesn't matter, but then they start talking about something and it's like, okay. This kind of does matter. So that's kind of the middle ground. And then you get to the part where you're close to the person and they're lying pretty much always matters, because even if it's a trivial lie, it drives you nuts because you're like, why are you doing that? Here's the thing. When you're close enough to somebody and they lie, sometimes it can be bothersome, even if it's a stupid lie or a ridiculous trivial lie, because then you think to yourself, the reason people lie to people who they care about and who they're close to is because they're afraid that person might get mad at them, or they're afraid that person might, it might alienate the friendship or whatever. But this person's lying about trivial, stupid things. Do they think that I'm that superficial a person that our friendship could be threatened by the fact that they ate two cookies instead of, you know, whatever? I mean, why are they lying about this dumb thing? So when you're close enough to somebody, it's not just significant lies that bother you. Even the small ones are going to bother you. And what happens in a situation like that, in my experience, is it just drives you nuts. That's it. You can't do anything about it because your relationship is.
Well, I mean, you can always do something about it. You can end the friendship if needed.
Well, that's the only thing you can do, is what I mean. All you can do is say, I'm done, because. Or the person can stop being a compulsive liar, but they're a compulsive liar. I mean, this is their issue. This is their problem. This is the thing that if they could get over it, they probably would have gotten it over it by now. And it's just going to drive you crazy, because if your relationship is past a certain point, like I said, if you don't know each other very well, you can kind of ignore it until they tell a whopper. And then you're like, gosh, what do I do? I mean, this is serious. I would normally like show a lot of compassion here or try to help them out, but I don't know if I can trust this person. But if you know them well, all the lies are going to hurt a little bit, and it's just going to drive you nuts until, like you said, you've got to stop. You've got to say, look, I can't be your friend because we're close enough that I should be able to rely on you, to trust you. And you know, I get emotionally invested in the things you say because that's what friends do. And then it turns out to be a stupid thing or nothing or a lie. And that's just not something that any reasonable person can cope with. And it's happened to me in what was a more than a casual friendship. So a friendship clear through to an intimate relationship, like a romantic relationship. I've experienced compulsive liars in just about every increment you can think of. And my experience is that from that, not casual friends, you know, actual friends onward, it's the same. I mean, it might be different in intensity, but it's the same in that you're not going to be able to tolerate it. The person either has to stop being a compulsive liar or you'll eventually run out of emotional energy to deal with that person. And of course, if it's a romantic or intimate relationship, it's not just going to burn out. It's going to probably explode, you know, and it's sad. I mean, to me, there are a lot of problems a person can have in a relationship, but that can just not even be fixed unless the person stops whatever they're doing. But if the problem they have involves any kind of deception, like they're a compulsive liar or they're a compulsive thief or they're, you know, or they're an addict who is engaging in that kind of behavior to support their addiction, and they're going to lie to you and steal and maybe do other bad things to you because of that. In sociology, we talk about how, you know, it only takes one person in a relationship to screw it up. Usually it's not just one person, but it only takes one. And, you know, sometimes a person who has these compulsions of deception or that are compulsions around being untrustworthy, it's done before it starts. Unless that person can grow out of it somehow, you, as the person who are their friend, if you decide, well, I'm going to stick with this person and help them out, or well, I'll just be friends with them anyway, you're going to run out of gas. You're going to, you know, in Covey, what was the guy's first name? The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, Stephen.
Yeah.
Stephen Covey would say that these types of people deplete your emotional bank account. They take things out, but they never put anything in. And eventually you can't. I mean, you actually physically, psychologically, emotionally can't. And that's how that's always going to go, because that's the only way it can go. Again, unless the person somehow figures out their stuff and they stop being like that.
This is such a solid Thanksgiving episode. All right. To reiterate, that is William specifically talking about his own experience. His language choice strayed far away from that point, but we just want to reiterate again. That was his own experience. And now I am going to speak to the experience of literally everyone except William. I have known many compulsive liars, mostly in a clinical setting, because former Surgeon General Dr. C. Everett Koop and I worked extensively with people who have this compulsion. And we found a cure. It was a simple once-a-day tablet, but we couldn't get the funding to mass produce. And here, no. I don't, okay. To my knowledge, I have only ever encountered one clinically compulsive liar. And it is someone I barely knew. It was someone that a friend was dating. And I only believe this because they told the friend that they were a compulsive liar. That's all I know for sure. My experience is very limited in that front. I have dealt with liars a lot. There is an experience that I largely attributed to men, and particularly the very few adult male friendships I've had, which I believe is now down to one. I had two, but one of them became a woman. So now it's just you. And you have never matched up with any of my other versions, so that doesn't work. But in the past, there was this thing that I got this vibe that guys do, which is just to lie casually in conversations because it sort of sounds better. Like, so you can jump in with a thing like, oh yeah, no, we were all about there. Yeah. I think of it as a lying that is just being so glib that you're basically lying. And I've never enjoyed it. I've always had a very strange relationship with honesty. I've always said I love lying, but never when I think anyone believes me. And that's pretty true. I've also tried to live by the code of believe everything everyone tells you as long as there's nothing riding on it. But that, of course, is aspirational. You can't not like that. Like you were saying, somebody says something, even if there's nothing to it, I can't pick what I believe. So it's like, yeah, no, that's probably bullshit. It doesn't matter, but it probably is. I think there's a lot of factors. I used to be very... honesty is very important. And I don't think that's true anymore. I think now my definition of honesty has changed. A lot of it's about the intent. If you are intending to deceive me, I don't like that. I'm more into white lies and shit nowadays, although you got to be careful with those, because I think those can be detrimental in ways you didn't expect. But if your perception is to be honest with me, if you are honest in spirit, if not in letter, I'm more comfortable with that. But yeah, it can't. Well, here's the thing with me. If it comes up too much, I call them out like all the time. And that's a problem.
Yeah.
Like, that's not good. Nobody ends up happy that way. But that's what if they keep doing, I'm like, I don't think that's true. I think you're making it up. Or I'll be like, oh yeah, when did that happen? But I can't ignore this aspect of, if it's a genuine psychological condition, having to take that into account. I mean, there are issues with my health. There are issues with you. And there are issues with my wife. I'm sure there are issues with me, where I know you all well enough to know certain things about your personality. In some cases, I even know where those stem from. I know certain things about my wife's upbringing that has led to certain personality traits. And those personality traits mean, if I'm trying to interact with her on a certain level, if I do it X method, it goes very poorly. If I do it Y method, it goes well. And sometimes Y method is very inconvenient. But I love her, and I understand where this is coming from, and I understand it's not something she can control. It is, I wouldn't say it's necessarily a clinical thing, but it's just a thing about how she communicates, that this method, which method X, which would work well for me and which seems simple and straightforward, won't work. And I have to be okay with that. And to me, there seems like a component of that in this situation, of like, they're not lying to get one over on you or anything. That the lying has nothing to do with you.
That's right. That's right.
And so you need to find a way to make it not about you. But at the same time, they're talking to you. They're communicating with you, and it's lies. So it kind of involves you.
Right. But the issue isn't, for me personally, it's not an issue of feeling personally slighted, like they're laughing behind my back or anything like that. It's when it ends up being a practical issue, like, you know, they weren't where they said they were going to be, or, you know, they said they were going to do this, but they didn't do it, or they did what they said they were going to do, but not the way they said they were going to do it. You know, it's problematic in real ways. And I'm not saying there isn't an emotional component, because there is, because, you know, you trust somebody, you're close to them, and it does hurt when they lie to you or betray you or whatever. And I think one of the reasons why I can stay in relationships like that for a long time is just because of what you're saying, is because everybody has problems. I have problems, and I want them to sort of, you know, to sort of understand and try to not judge me too harshly for my problems. So I don't want to judge them too harshly for their problems. But the issue is that when someone, and it doesn't matter what the person's problem is, let's say, like you say, it's a idiosyncratic flaw that causes them to make life difficult for their partner or whatever. In a healthy relationship, either they're going to notice that and they're go, I don't know why I do that. I'm so sorry. I know this is a problem that you have to deal with, and I really appreciate your patience. Or if they're not aware of that, there's some other way that they compensate, because you can tell that they're looking past your faults too. In these situations, there's nothing. I mean, the person lies, there's damage done.
There are self-aware compulsive liars.
Oh yeah, that's
true. There are people who know they're compulsive liars and don't want to be compulsive liars, but are compulsive liars. And that's a factor. And I mean, and again, that becomes intent again. If you know this is a problem and you work against it, but you have trouble with it, I'm more willing to give you some effort. The kind of things you talk about, I've dealt with this in other versions, and I often in that, it hurts the relationship, but I can maintain. I just don't rely on them for any of that. So like, we agreed we're going to go to the movies, and every time we set it up, they don't show up. Well, the next time they ask, I'm going to be like, no, I don't think that's something we can do. And yeah, that sucks, but I don't think we can do that.
See, I think I
would agree.
In my life, I think I attract, or have in my life attracted, a certain kind of person who knows that I'm going to put up with certain things.
That's absolutely why I'm here.
And I do put up with them because I want them to put up with me. I've got, you know, I know that I'm not easy to live with. So, you know, I can overlook someone's issues if they can overlook mine. But, you know, I've gotten in a lot of situations where the person, they just want to take advantage, right? I mean, like I say, they want to take, yeah. They don't want to give anything. And I'll stay in a situation, or at least in the past, stay in a situation like that for a very long time before I run out of, you know, I run out and then I'm done.
Yeah.
So that's my experience. That's my personal experience. As you pointed out, I kind of was speaking of it in extreme terms, but that's still the way I've experienced it, was consistently every time like that. I'm sure it's not always like that with like other people or whatever, but these are the types of relationships that I've attracted in my past and that I handled obviously very poorly because
we are talking about the extremes here, which I'm not sure was the one that there's a category. There's the meaningless crap. They lie about how many cookies they eat, whatever. And then there's the, I'm going to do this for you, but I didn't, or, you know, that kind of stuff. And then there's the middle ground of, yeah, I've totally run a marathon. I did it last week. Or I had this terrible traumatic experience.
Yeah, right.
And I'm not asking for help. I'm not going to be following up with authorities or whatever. I just want you to know and feel bad for me and sympathetic towards me.
Or I have just met someone who has experienced this thing, and I want to make them think that we have some deep connection because I've experienced it too.
So I also did it. Yes.
Yeah.
And the problem with that, if it's a friend of yours and you know they do this, is, I mean, I don't want to be comforting you for this terrible thing that happened that I'm almost certain didn't happen. Like, it doesn't, it's not a problem. I could just like, oh yeah, that's just like, it's, I can do that. I don't like doing it. It doesn't feel right being like, oh, that's rough. That's so bad. I'm really confident this didn't fucking happen.
Things, though, start to move from being just lying. The person's just telling a lie, and it starts to feel more like a gaslighting situation, right? More like I'm leading you down a primrose path here for a reason and for an agenda, right? Because sometimes...
And often if you've got an enemy involved. So this terrible thing happened to me. Great. This terrible thing was done to me by X. And then I want you on my side. And in some situation, X may come into play. I really need to come up with other variables, so I'm going to confuse things. And I want you to be with me against them. I had somebody who basically got into a thing where she would always talk about how everybody was abusing her. And it was basically people who didn't go along with what she wanted. And she was not a compulsive liar, but she had really bad mental health problems and eventually got put in a state hospital and then in jail. And then I think is still in jail because they assaulted a guard and there was a whole bunch of things. But that was how it started, is they had problems and I helped them with problems and they were real problems. And then they would talk about other things and I didn't know it wasn't true. So I just felt bad for them. They would cry and I would hold them or whatever. And then it would be about the people who had done the things. And then I'm supposed to also hate that person. And then it gets weird.
Well, there's a particular strategy, and we're talking about a lot of different things here. Like, compulsive liar is where we started. And as you pointed out, that's a very specific thing. And I don't think of a compulsive liar as necessarily a gaslighter, because gaslighting to me is a very different thing. I don't think of a compulsive liar as someone who compulsively exaggerates, right? No. Like, because that's also a little bit different thing. But also maybe even a little bit nuanced thing still is, there is a tactic that certain people who I would more categorize as like narcissists or whatever, there's a tactic where you tell someone you've experienced a specific kind of trauma that's dramatic enough that people, the people you're telling, are certain you must be telling the truth, because some people just have it in their heads that there are some types of trauma.
Who would lie about that?
Yeah. Who would lie about that? So there's two things they're trying to accomplish. One, they're trying to get you to immediately believe them because it's so dramatic. But also, as you were pointing out, they'll accuse a person that is, like you said, is their enemy, who they want to marginalize and they want to get people to hate. And since they're telling such a dramatic lie about the person, nobody's going to go confront them, right? Nobody's going to go ask them. They're just going to assume it's true. So it's a perfect lie, because it gets people to believe it right away, and it alienates people right away from this person they don't even know, but who they're not even going to talk to or approach. They're just going to assume, oh, this person's a rapist, or this person's a physical abuser.
And we should,
and they won't even ask.
Probably specify, a lot of this doesn't happen consciously. People don't plan this out shit in their head. I mean, some people do, but a lot of the circumstances I've been in, no, it was just sort of in the moment. And and in some cases, even like in my life, when I have told lies when I was younger and stuff, I found one of the best tricks is to mostly convince myself of its truth before I say it.
That's right. Yep.
And
that's
so you can talk yourself into. We're over time and we need to wrap this up, but I do. I feel Azurtown looking for advice, which is a terrible idea. Don't come to us for that. What's wrong with you? But in a situation that it sounds like he's in, the answer is fucked if I know. And it's going to be very personalized to you and the other person and the nature of your relationship. But I do want to say something that I think is important here is, no matter how big a liar they are, and no matter how clinical it may be, and no matter how they feel about it, and no matter how, what impact it has on you, how you respond, any of that, there's no blame happening here. That's important. If you decide you can't be friends with them, it's not because they're so extreme a liar, or because you're so unwilling to have sympathy for their condition, or any of that stuff. It's because it's more than you can handle.
Yeah.
And alternatively, if you're like, they suck when they do that, and this is awful, but it's stuff I can work around, and I do like their friendship, and that's fine. You're not giving in to a shitty person. They have a problem, and you are able to tolerate it.
That's right.
And that's always going to be the question, but it should never be whose fault it is, or if they deserve to be tolerated, or if you deserved, like, don't ever think in those terms. It's whether you can handle it or not. All relationships should be about, what is this relationship? Am I getting enough to, do I benefit enough from it that it's worth the cost? Thinking it as a bank account again is the kind of thing. Is it important enough to me to deal with the slings and arrows involved? And that question should have nothing to do with who's right, who's wrong, what's appropriate. It is what it is. Now, if you're like, I seem to have a low bar for ditching friends, maybe you need to look internally for that. But it's not about your specific relationship. Your relationship is what you can tolerate versus what you get on both sides. And it always should be.
I completely agree with that. I mean,
I have been totally a hair's breadth from cutting off William pretty much since I met him, but it's never quite gone over. So
you can definitely,
I check every day.
You can definitely remain in a relationship with a person like that without thinking you're a chump or something. You know, you're just deciding, okay, yeah, I can deal with this. Or maybe you can't, and that's fine too. I mean,
these people don't deserve to have a friend because this thing is so shitty, even though I can tolerate it.
No.
If you get enough out of the friendship, I mean, don't gloss over horrible things they're doing.
That's right.
always be honest. I mean,
there's but also irony. as you said, if you do come to a point where you feel like I can't do this, that's okay too. And it doesn't mean you hate the person or you think the person deserves to be given up on or whatever.
Yeah. And it's just not how their fault. It's not your fault.
It's just not. That's right. That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
But as I've said before, I think a lot about growing older is figuring out what's important to you and focusing on that. And some of that, I know it has been for me, is letting go of some relationships that I'm like, I'm going to spread myself too thin. If I hold on to these relationships that aren't as important to me, I'm not going to be as good a friend to the people I do care about as I want to be. Or I'm not going to be a good enough friend to myself or whatever.
You have to say, when I have finally let go of those relationships that I don't think I can handle, I have felt very bad about it. And even when I got over feeling bad about that, it's like, and I came to the conclusion that you were talking about where, look, this is just how it is. It's not a, you know, nobody needs to be blamed here. Nobody needs to feel bad. I still felt bad for that person because I could see that they were alienating, not just me, they were alienating a lot of people and very unhappy. And I just wished that something would happen. I wasn't going to be the one to help them figure it out, but I wished that somebody would or could, or some situation, because they're very unhappy people. People who are compulsive liars. I mean, they're not, there's more to be pitied than hated, I think.
Yeah. But, and ending a relationship is always, I mean, there are those instances where it's like, you know what? This doesn't work on a variety of levels. And you and I are both going to have better lives if we never speak again. But those are rare. More often it's like, yeah, this kind of sucks. And sometimes, and often it sucks more for the person who didn't want to end the relationship. But they have to figure out stuff for them, and you have to figure out stuff for you.
That's right. That's right. And that's okay. That's the way it works. It's hard, but that is the way it works. Yep. Yeah.
So as you're telling, we hope this helped, because we're not getting anything else out of this episode. I mean, the families have turned this shit off and are like, where's pie? I know I said I was full, but I would rather eat more pie until I vomit than listen to these guys, because I'm going to vomit sooner. Anyway, we hope you all have had a happy Thanksgiving, except Craig. Because Craig doesn't get Thanksgiving. Because he's not one of the cool kids, by which I mean American. Also, if there's any other not cool kids out there, if there's one thing I've always tried to get across with this podcast, is the USA is the greatest country in the world because of freedom, which is not free. And love it or go back to where you came from. Even if it was here, go back to where. I'm not sure. I'm not America. That's my important thing here. America. I don't have the slogans down, okay? So sue me, which is something that happens a lot in this country. So anyway, next week, this is a Tuesday when we're recording this, because obviously it's not Thanksgiving. Next week is going to be weird too, because I have all the appointments next Thursday. But listen again, and we will have more stuff. And in the meantime, I hope the remaining 3 days of your 4-day weekend are as tolerable, painless, and where applicable, quick as possible.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.